Hello, everyone. My name is Alex Trimble, and this is the Executive Pill Podcast. As you know, all of our speaking, coaching, and training services are all focused on helping organizations prepare high-performing leaders from all backgrounds to successfully transition to and excel in VP, senior VP, and other C-suite level positions. So if you are interested in that and growing a highly effective, diverse leadership team, then you are in the right place. And two, we encourage you to reach out to us. You can find us at gpsleadership.org or reach out to our team members at team@gpsleadership.org. So we can find a way and we can partner to find a way to make sure you and your organization reaches diversity goals. Again, I'm going to keep talking about this because it is so freaking amazing. The Executive Pill is now one of the top 5% most popular podcast shows in the world. And this didn't happen by accident. It was you who made this possible. And it will be you who determines the success of this episode in the future. So look, if you find these episodes, this show is helpful. If you learn something from today, and if you want to continue to share this good news with the world, then please, please, please do us a favor and click that like button, click the subscribe button, comment, share your thoughts below in the comment section. One, so we can engage with you and we can know what content is really on your hearts and hitting you, but two, they can help the algorithm, right? The more you interact with this show, the more people get to watch and interact with it as well. So please, please, please continue to support this show. And as finally, I'll just remember to remind everyone that relationships that work, four simple steps to building intentional connections in business and in life, is now available for purchase on Amazon. And the reviews are amazing. So yeah, actually, you can go and check it out and see some of those reviews from really wonderful leaders. So if you want to build relationships with your team members, with your clients, with your external stakeholders, this is the book you need to read, Relationships That Work, Four Simple Steps to Building Intentional Connections in Business and in Life. And with no further ado, let me say, today is a good day. See, today we have the magnificent, wonderful, always hilarious, and very witty Miss Beth Gillette. And I'm laughing for a reason. She knows why. So look, Beth serves as the Chief People Officer at Well and an Executive Board Member at the Institute for Contemporary Leadership. She has served as a trusted advisor for senior executives, boards, and investors and a thought leader on issues of individual and organizational change, culture, leadership development, executive selection assessment, and cultivating high performance teams. Look, prior to her recent roles, Beth served as a VP for Leadership and Organizational Effectiveness at look, I want to make sure everyone says knows this, Alix Partners, and a senior faculty member at the Center for Creative Leadership, where all leadership is creative. I'm not sure if that's their tag, but I'm just going to say that. How are you doing today, madam?
I am doing great, Alex. Thank you so much.
You know, you and I were just having a conversation about double dutching. And how both of us grew up in an age and in a time back way beyond, right? When we engaged in double dutch, and you had me thinking, how, you know, we're so focused on, you know, the future. The world we live in moves so fast. The technology we have moves so fast. I was actually just literally having a conversation with a guy yesterday, one of my clients, about like how I have always told people that that I want them to learn how to drive a stick shift, because you just never know when you need it. However, like in 10, 15 years, people might not even be driving. They may just be automated cars. So here's my question is, you know, how much as leaders should we be bringing the time-tested information and strategy to the table versus just saying, hey, you know what? We're in a new time. Let's adapt those new things out there.
Yeah. Well, it's a great question, and there's not a perfect answer to it, because it's one of those kind of it depends, and it's a combination, et cetera. What I would say is there are some foundational attributes or maybe even competencies you can think about having as a leader that are timeless and ageless for the most part, and that also overlap significantly with being a really good human being. And those as a foundation can then allow you to, you know, to pull in the specific sort of situation appropriate or time appropriate skill or set of knowledge to an extent. I mean, certainly there's also just the advancing technology and innovation that we have to stay up on, such as AI. Mm-hmm. So I would say those kind of core foundational things are, you know, ethics and principles, being a values-driven person, being clear on what your values are, that self-awareness. And then a lot of it is around emotional intelligence. And that doesn't mean you have to be the most amazing networker in the world or the warmest person in the world. There are a lot of ways of being successful as a leader, but some basic emotional intelligence, which I define, as many do, and as Daniel Goleman wrote about, as a combination of self-awareness and self-management, as well as sort of other awareness and other management, or what you might call, you know, empathy, perspective of others, and social or interpersonal skill. So those sort of self and other awareness and management makes up emotional intelligence. So some degree of that to be working on, if it doesn't come quite naturally, I think is foundational. And then there are the sort of thinking skills that will allow you to adapt into the future. So analytical thinking, critical thinking, strategic thinking, these are things that can be honed. And they can be honed by working through and trying to understand data, even beginning at a very basic level and advancing from there. Critical thinking, you know, being aware of biases, learning to question things from multiple angles, being skeptical about things, being careful about the source of information, that, you know, those critical thinking skills. And then strategic, you know, having a longer term view, understanding trade-offs, being able to hold two things at the same time. If you have analytic, critical, and strategic thinking skills, and you have some basic emotional intelligence, and you're grounded in your ethics, then you'll be able to adapt as time, you know, brings new challenges and changes, and you'll be able to learn. And those, I think, are the key things that make leaders successful.
I am 100% with you. And you make me think of it as this video I saw the other day. It's really interesting. So the guy said, he's doing an interview, and the guy says, okay, so what's 5 + 5? The other guy says, 10. Okay. So what's 9 + 1? And he's like, 10. So what's 20 - 10? He's like, 10. And he goes down this list, and he's like, look, there's an infinite way of getting to the number 10. And he said, the problem that most people have is that they believe there is one way, only one way to accomplish their goal. There's only one way to be an effective leader. But the reality is that, as you said, all of us are different. All of us are unique. We bring different experiences and strengths to the table that compel to create this hopefully transformative leader. And so even when you talk about the emotional intelligence piece, and you talk about the ability to analytical think, are there some things that you just believe are core? Even though we all have these different pieces of us that create a good leader, you've now mentioned two. Are there any others that you think are just like core to every successful leader?
Well, I mean, there's certainly a lot out there, particularly among leadership consultants, about what has to be in place. And so, you know, sort of that critical thinking, I'm always skeptical of these things. And I want empirical evidence. So I would say the proof is in the pudding. If a leader can deliver what a leader is supposed to deliver, which is typically defined along the lines of mobilizing a group in accomplishing a goal, right? So, you know, that involves all sorts of things, like being able to help them see what the goal is, vision and with planning and whatnot. It involves the mobilization parts of mobilizing people through motivation and bringing them together so that it's efficiently done. And that's about team building and whatnot. So certainly there are a lot of things that lead to those successful outcomes. And I would say, you know, most leaders are good at being able to set goals and a vision for people. And it doesn't have to be visionary, but, you know, helping people understand where they're going, being able to provide, you know, a sense of accountability and motivation so that people actually achieve. Those are really important. And being able to manage oneself so that one does not become negative or emotional or reactive, but can maintain a stable, safe environment for people so that they can, you know, do those things that need to get you to the goals. Now, you know, again, some of that is more like a Venn diagram than a core set that have to happen. Most good leaders have some things that overlap in terms of getting things done. But again, the how is quite individual. And I would say, you know, as the world becomes more globalized, more integrated in workplaces, more where the expectations are rising, that that diversity is not only recognized but is respected through you know, active management of inclusion and equity in the workplace, so that people have a sense of belonging, then I think leaders have an increased responsibility to pay attention to those things in everything they do, and not just over here in the DEI efforts, but in everything they do, in how they get to know people and motivate them, in how they think about career development, and how they think about leveraging people's skills and experiences and lived experience. And so, again, that comes back to emotional intelligence and a willingness to learn and understand and grow. So, you know, maybe curiosity is part of what is core to leadership.
You know, so there's two pieces. One, I'm just gonna put because I am one of those consultants, right?
So was I.
So but you know what, I will say really quickly, I do believe that, you know, so my big thing is I teach leaders how to build intentional and meaningful relationships, strategic relationships, and navigate those relationships. Yeah. And, you know, I say because relationships are required for your staff, for your external stakeholders, for your customers, for your leadership, relationships are critical, especially in political situations. Like, how do you navigate complex and difficult relationships, even when they're important, right? But then I would say, you know, there are some people who don't have that skill, who don't want to learn that skill. Okay, cool. It's your choice. But you still need that skill around you, which means that you need to make sure you hire someone and have someone on your team who does have those skills so that you can still navigate those spaces. Just as, you know, certain leaders aren't great at, maybe they're not the greatest motivator. Cool, got it. That's not your thing. But do you have someone on your team who can step into a role and can do those things? Right. So I kind of think about what you talk about, like those skills, those competencies. You may not have all of them, but you may need them around you somehow.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to think about it. And it gets to this idea that the proof is in the pudding, is the outcome. Can that leader do things, manage things in such a way that goals get achieved through people? And whether it's all based on their incredible degree of skill or whether it's they're facilitating others with those skills. But the point is that leader is doing things that get the goals done through people, you know, with a, you know, still with a sense of people wanting to be there, right? And so I think that's a great way to think about it. And it also gets at this issue that, you know, we're all different. And so if we think about, you know, how can we complement and supplement each other, then it also takes some of the pressure off. Having said all that, I would say one thing, and that is that the leader, if indeed a leader is a leader, in terms of you know, more respect shown or deference shown to them because of their title, if they have more compensation, greater compensation because of their responsibilities. In other words, and they have more power because of their responsibilities. Those things are benefits to that individual. And with those benefits, I think comes responsibility to have some basic things in place. And that includes the ethics and professionalism. That includes the emotional intelligence. So they may not be the greatest motivator, but they have to have some degree of relationship ability if they're truly going to lead people, I think.
And to your point, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, at the end of the day, the leader's still responsible, right?
Exactly.
If you're managing and pulling all these levers, you're still at the end of the day responsible for that ultimate result. I love to say, you know, you could be the most open-minded leader, you could be the most caring, the most motivational leader. But if you don't produce results, there's, you know,
then you're just a really nice person.
Such a really nice person.
And that's fine too, but you probably shouldn't be in a leadership position. We need people who are really nice people.
Yes, yes. The other thing you make me think about is you're talking about, you know, as we move forward, where, you know, inclusivity and diversity and equity and accessibility and so on and so forth are more not only a present, but valued, right? Mm-hmm. And understood and respected. There's a need for, I think, kind of being more open-minded on what this means. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to say this. Now, if you don't want to address it, I understand. People may not like me for this. I'm going to say this. I think that in order to be an effective leader moving forward, I think you have to be open-minded. When I say open-minded, I mean you have to be able to accept that two things can be right at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, I was talking to someone recently, and I was like, you know, look, you know, yes, there are benefits to being tall, but you get to reach in the top shelf and get things. Then there are also benefits of being shorter, because there are costs and benefits to being everyone. There's cost, you know, is a benefit of me having short hair, long hair, benefit of me having glasses, not wearing glasses. Like there's pros and cons for everything. But what I see a lot is that people fall into this bucket of that this side has a challenge or this side has a benefit. And the other side, we should don't even think about that. This side. And I don't think that's going to be as inclusive. I'll provide a concrete example. I was having a conversation with, look, I'm a man. So in this situation, it was a conversation about men. And we were talking about how many challenges that women have to go through, because this is the reality, right? You know, whether it be discrimination, whether it be a whole list of other things that we all know about, right? And I was like, dude, like that's so valid. And then I think about my son who's now 3 months old. I think about, you know, for men, I'm like, yeah, you know, and men have some challenges too. Like, you know, the suicide rate among men are crazy. The rape of men in prison, crazy. Homelessness for men, crazy. And they were like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Why are you making this about men? I'm like, well, no, I'm not taking anything away from what you're saying. I'm additive saying there's a challenge on this side too. And let's work together to fix both of them. But you know what I'm saying? Like,
absolutely. This is an absolutely huge priority for me, actually. So there are so many things that you said that I would love to unpack. One is, I have to say that The Men and Boys Are Not All Right was a podcast that Ezra Klein did, I think, last spring, 2-episode podcast that was excellent. It was a review of a gentleman's book, and I'm forgetting the author's name, but it was about exactly what you talk about. So that is an aside I think it's worth everybody listening to. It's really important. The idea of holding two things at the same time, and being open-minded, I do think is increasingly important for leaders. I don't think it necessarily was as needed when you know, people were more within their tribes, when things were much more rigid in terms of social structures, in terms of context and whatnot. But I do think it is becoming more and more important in general. In addition to that, it is characteristic of what happens as an adult develops wisdom over the lifespan. And so you are always going to get more wisdom, more good leadership out of people who can hold two things at the same time. This is, in fact, how I, as a psychologist by training and an adult development oriented psychologist in particular, this is how I define adult development, which is the increasing complexity of mind, the ability to be increasingly complex in terms of what you can experience and tolerate emotionally and what you can experience and tolerate cognitively. So in both cases. So one of the things that we know about children's development is, you know, it happens in these stages where it just sort of seems to unfold pretty naturally as long as they have relatively, you know, decent conditions, where, you know, they learn to crawl and then walk, they go from, you know, milk to solid foods, they get to a point where they begin to understand more abstract thinking. In adolescence, they begin to experiment with who am I and the identity as they get more and more aware of broader kinds of cognitive abstract notions, and so on. But we often sort of just assume it sort of ends in the early 20s. Maybe we know brain continues to develop towards the mid 20s, but okay, that's where it kind of ends.
Yeah.
But it's clear that development continues throughout adulthood, but not necessarily by default as a natural phenomenon, unless certain things happen. And so what happens to allow people to develop is people bump up against the limits of their existing way of understanding the world and themselves. And you can either sort of retrench and go back from that and stay in your cocoon, your bubble, your echo chamber, et cetera, and reinforce the way that you think about things and do things. Or you can say, whoa, this is not what I expected. I'm not able to make sense of this. I need to kind of think about things differently, understand things differently. Yeah. It's a challenging, disruptive kind of experience. It might be at a micro level throughout life, or it could be in big chunks, but it is that that allows us to continue to become more complex. And part of that complexity is understanding that multiple things can exist, can be true at the same time. And that's hard when you're, you know, rigid in your bubble. Mm-hmm. But that is really important, especially in the world. We see it not only in organizations, but it has to do with, you know, look at our society in the US, with political discourse, the cancel culture. And this is both on the right and the left. We have an absolute absence of complexity of mind. Mm-hmm. You see it globally, increasing populism and dictator oriented kind of movements where people want simplicity. They want a leader who just says, here is how it is, whether or not, and they don't want to have to think about, is that really true? Is that good? How does that relate to other things? They just want this clear simplicity. And that is because the world has become scarier with social media and AI and the rise of technology and the fact that we're 24/7 exposed to all of the problems in the world that we didn't used to know about, because we only would hear about a war if it was on the once a week paper, right? So there are a lot of reasons for this, but it really is important for leaders who aspire to especially lead larger initiatives and organizations to be inclusive of a multitude of perspectives, to be able to manage conflict, to be able to manage dialogue, to be able to promote an inclusive culture. It's really important for those leaders themselves to develop themselves in this way. And that is by, you know, exposing yourself, pushing yourself, reflecting, disrupting things, having conversations with people who have different points of view, reading things that are different points of view, having exposure to multimedia, not just the ones that reinforce your own ideas and values, travel, whatever that means, whether it's geographically or whether it's by reading, and you know, speaking with people who have different experiences. These are all critical, because the reality is that living in a diverse society productively is actually very hard. We talk about it like it's some hunky-dory idea. Oh, DEI, diversity, et cetera. Look at the attempt to integrate American society in the, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s on. It was extremely difficult to try to do that, and it has not been very successful. Just look at maps of every geography, every U.S. city, and you see terrible segregation. You still see it in housing. Look at the prison population. Look, I mean, every system in American society. And so, you know, integration and true equality is still aspirational for our society. And that's in large part because it's so difficult for people to develop the complexity and the wisdom and the ability to manage the multiple dynamics that are play. So one brief example is history. I can't handle what actually happened in history because that threatens my identity. So I'm gonna not allow it to be taught, or I'm going to only emphasize certain things, or I'm going to change certain things, as opposed to being able to tolerate emotionally and cognitively the fact that it's really hard to look at history and the pain and suffering and, you know, all of the things that have happened, and that, you know, people who some identify with were responsible for, others who identify with were the victims of, but it's really quite a human mess, history. Yeah. But we, you know, aren't going to become any wiser. We're not going to become any more integrated and equitable. We're not going to solve wealth inequalities. We're not going to solve this political crisis we're in. We're not going to have effective civic engagement and institutions if we can't take a look at the stuff that's very painful to look at and teach it and learn from it.
You... Hashtag preach. I love, you are wonderful. We're going to continue talking even after this show. We have to. You said so much. So, okay. So the first thing is, it sounds like in order to do this, in order to be open-minded and consider that two things can be true, one, you have to be intentional. I feel like it sounds like what you're saying is like, this doesn't just happen.
Right.
You have to be intentional to make these things happen. And, you know, you make me think of, I was doing a tour around DC the other day, just, you know, taking my mother-in-law around, showing her stuff, and went to the Lincoln Monument. And if you ever go to Lincoln Monument, you go to the bottom floor, you can see some of these quotes. Mm-hmm. One of his quotes is basically, if I could save the Union and not end slavery, I'd do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone kind of credits Abraham Lincoln with, you know, the abolishment of slavery, like he just really wanted that to happen. But also he said, hey, look, if I could keep the Union together without it, it'll happen. I'll do that too. Yeah. And so like when I first read that quote, I was upset. Like I was annoyed. Okay. And then I was like, okay, sure. Mm-hmm. If that was his perspective, got it, understood. It still ended slavery for the majority of people. It didn't end all slavery. You know, what happened with Juneteenth and whatnot. And understanding that, okay, yeah, even though it's not perfect, it's a messy, history is messy, life is messy. And so I love the point you bring up that. And then the other point I want to bring up really briefly, my wife, she talked about this the other day, and I love her for this. She said, intentional friendship. So I my books are, my most recent book is on relationships at work, about building intentional relationships. So, you know, Alex, you know, when you are a kid, your friends are, I mean, your child, your friends are the people your parents put you around, right?
Right.
Those are your friends. And then you become a kid, a little older, your friend, the one who are in the same class as you or in mm-hmm. the same school as you. And then you become an adult and your friends are the people who are in the same building as you, or the same organization as you, or in the same club as you. And you said, but as an adult, you have something that you don't have as a kid. You have the ability to choose to intentionally go out of your just your circle because of your circumstances. You have the ability to choose to go somewhere else and build relationships with someone who you don't normally necessarily be in interaction with. And so like this intentionality thing is just, I love what you're talking about, but how do we do this when two things are happening? Again, as we are becoming a smaller world, we do have the reality of, and this is not a knock because I'm not against this, more people teleworking, right? And so teleworking means a lot of people are at home and or so they're not traveling. I used to meet people that's on the metro, on the train, mm-hmm. walking, and but now I don't do that because I'm here or I'm going to a specific place where I know specific people. Mm-hmm. So how does that work when we are kind of being less out yeah. in the world?
That's a great point. Wow. First of all, I love that way that your wife frame that. That's it's so true. It's so true. But it's a great question. You know, we're sort of isolating ourselves and it's got a lot of benefits. It's easier to, you know, get the laundry done. And you know, so on as a metaphor for all of it. It's more relaxing not to have to, you know, do the commute, et cetera, et cetera. But there are definite trade-offs and downsides to it. And I think that's a really important one. And so, you know, I don't know the best answer to it, but I think your point about intentionality has to be a key driver here. I'll tell you, I moved from Chapel Hill, North Carolina to Richmond, Virginia 2 years ago. And that was to be closer to my elderly parents who are in Northern Virginia, but to still have, you know, be able to go to my job in North Carolina. So kind of in between. But I've fallen in love with Richmond. It's got a lot of wonderful aspects to it. And but because I was commuting to work or going up to my parents, I was a little bit like just a visitor for a long time. And finally, I decided last spring, I need to have a sense of community and identity here, and I need to meet people. And I thought about, you know, I have an opportunity because I'm starting from scratch and I don't work here. You know, I just live here. I have an opportunity to identify organizations and issues that are important to me across a broad spectrum and that can expose me to things that I would not otherwise be exposed to. And so I began to get involved with organizations that have all sorts of different kinds of missions and whatnot. And by doing that, I'm now exposed to all sorts of people who are just the most interesting, diverse range of people one could imagine across every possible variable. Mm-hmm. And so it's really been a neat opportunity to do that. And it's been a growth opportunity for sure. Absolutely.
I know we got to start wrapping up soon, but I want to throw one last question on the table, which is I hate that it's such a ridiculous question. But I'd love to talk to you about the increasing career mobility and the impact that it has on individuals and individuals in different, you know, demographic backgrounds. Mm-hmm. You know, we used to talk about how you should stay in a company for ever, right? And you get a big, you know, golden watch at the end. Right. Young people, you may not know about this golden watch thing, but it was a thing.
like double Dutch. Okay.
So, you know, are there benefits? Do you think there are actual benefits to people moving around more? Because we know there's drawbacks, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
Well, you know, that's an interesting question too. I mean, yes, there are benefits and there are pros and cons, right? There are benefits and there are downsides. I mean, to the point I was making earlier about exposing yourself to difference and to new experiences and to things that, you know, sort of take you out of your day-to-day and disruption. I think moving around and experiencing different places, different people, different food, different music, whatever, different scenery, yeah. this is part of what I think helps us to develop. And you know, you know it. If you meet somebody who's traveled a lot throughout the world or who has lived in multiple places, there's definitely a difference compared to somebody who's just been in the same place all the time. It's not right or wrong, but there's a difference. Having said that, I also am very interested in and maybe sad to some extent about the loss of our our broader extended families and communities that have provided throughout human history so much support and so much sense of security and identity, help with child rearing, help with when you're sick, help when you're down, help building houses, what have you. And, you know, some cultures retain more of that than others, but, you know, certainly the more you move around in different places, the less you have that physically around you. And there's definitely trade-offs to that. There is a lot that has been lost. And I would argue that mental health crisis, if, you know, as some people call it, but the increased anxiety and depression, sense of alienation, loneliness. I mean, the Surgeon General coming out and saying that loneliness is an epidemic. These things obviously would not be as acute if there was a more fulsome social support network that is more like what we used to have. Now, there'd be trade-offs to that, right? But all of these are considerations. So, you know, I think even more emphasis then on your point about intentional friendships and intentional community building, you know, create your social network, your social support system, if you are moving around a lot. Mm-hmm. Certainly there's more that can be done through, social media and digitally and Zoom and whatnot as well. But also think seriously about, what you lose if you move away from a network and a grounding and a support system and whatnot, because both are true. Both have trade-offs. Both are good and both have elements that are not as good.
I want to say two things and I want to open the floor back up to you. One, we have seen if most people probably have noticed this, the community institutions that we used to engage in, we're not engaging with as much. Like there, you know, most people aren't going to, you know, the local church every Sunday with have those relationships. Most people aren't going to local blah blah. Like it's just those institutions, I think, are kind of starting to really slowly deteriorate, which you then see, and it makes sense now. More people are looking for their employer to be that community for them.
Yeah.
And employers, I think, are really struggling on how to do that effectively because, you know, before it was just like, we're an employer. And then you go back home and be with your family and your community. But now it's like, your employer needs to be your community. And how do we do that? How do we financially do that? How do we do that also being, you know, we're HR and, you know, there's things you cannot do and things you can do. So people, I think it's something to think about is, again, why it's also, I think it's really important to have a community outside of your office, have your own community. And then the second piece is, this is a very scary thought, but I want to put this on the table for everyone just so you can think about it. If you want to, you can decide to, you can close your ears. But I was listening to a guy, I was reading a book recently, and he said, my parents are 60 odd years old, and they live in this state and I live in this state. So I see them roughly once a year, which means I may see my parents 10 times before they're, that's my life. Mm. And I was like, oh my God, my parents live in California. I live out in the DC area. I see them roughly once a year. What does that mean? I only going to see my parents, 10, 15 times. And that's something to think about. And just not saying everyone needs to go visit their parents, but just something to think about that. You may want to build some intentionality around it. Madam Beth, you have been magnificent, phenomenal, wonderful. Do you have any closing remarks, thoughts, anything for our audience?
Well, I want to just underscore the intentionality part. I think that's a great point. One thing I might recommend In addition to your books, which I think hit on such important points, and this is somewhat related, there's a book that my former partners and my colleagues at the Institute of Contemporary Leadership have recently published. Steve Garcia and Dan Fisher published a book called The End of Leadership as We Know It. And it's very much about social networks, networks, organizational networks, and they really peel back all of the ways that being connected and paying attention to your network within an organizational or community setting has impact. And so, you know, politically, and that includes organizational politics, information sharing, influence, social support, and, you know, the list goes on. And it's very much about that being kind of the new norm of getting things done in workplaces, as opposed to some of maybe the more traditional hierarchical approaches. Now, I'm not one who believes in holacracy or flat organizations entirely, because there's an efficiency reason, and there's also a responsibility reason. Somebody needs, the buck needs to stop at certain places, right? And et cetera. So I do believe that, you know, there's a reason for some structure, but I would recommend that as a read for folks. And there's so much more I would love to just pull on in terms of the threads that we've touched on. So I'll stop there and just tell you how delightful the conversation has been for me, Alex.
That just means that we have to do this again. I always tell people, seriously, that their first interaction, the only outcome you're looking for in a first interaction is a second interaction.
The second, yeah.
Because, you know, you can't learn everything about someone in one interaction. There's no way. So just have a good enough time where they want to pick up the phone when you call next time.
Yeah, no, I love it. It's so true.
Everyone, you know where I'm going with this. If you found anything of that, I know you found something of value in this episode. So look, I don't even want to question. Click the like, click subscribe, put your comments below. Thank you so much. There's so many people who have been engaging in the comment section. Just shout out to all of you. I really appreciate you. And we appreciate it because, again, we get to hear what you really are finding, like those aha moments for you. So please continue to do that. And again, you need to read The Relationships That Work. You can find it on Amazon today, a phenomenal book built to specifically help individuals who want to rise up the leadership ranks or just have more intentional relationships in life. Relationships That Work, available now. And I do have to say, finally, I just want to slip this back in. Beth, you're friggin' awesome. I really love the concept you brought up today. And I really do want to continue talking about those, because the very, very interesting points that have honestly given me some pause myself. So thank you so much, everyone. I encourage you to, as always, stay strong, stay positive, and definitely stay moving. See ya.
Thanks for listening to The Executive Appeal with Alex Trumbull. I invite you to follow The Executive Appeal wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow me, your host, Alex Trumbull, across all socials or via email for exclusive webinars, courses, and speaking engagements on continued topics of executive leadership. So until next time, stay strong, stay positive, and definitely stay moving.